Our reader tonight is a dear friend and a colleague at Washington University for over two decades. But before he came to St. Louis, he sent in 1959 the first of several stories that my wife and I published in Perspective, a quarterly that we edited for some 30 years. We both said that he would become famous as a writer and that his writing would make him rich, because the kind of writing he was doing had the possibility of breaking out of the elitist circle of readers that enjoyed, for instance, the late novels of Henry James. Serious novelists are not uncommon, but comic serious ones are rare, very rare. Elkin's kind of antic imagination, which involves both substance and style, was present when Sterne wrote in Tristram Shandy his digression on noses. When Dickens, in Great Expectations, sent Pip in his new finery and hubris back home to the mockery of a shopkeeper's errand boy. When Mark Twain invented his Connecticut Yankee, and when Faulkner, about whom Elkin wrote his doctoral dissertation, traced the journey of a corpse in As I Lay Dying. After six novels and two volumes of stories, the fame is secure. Boswell, Criers and Kibitzers, A Bad Man, The Dick Gibson Show, Searches and Seizures, The Franchiser, The Living End, and the just-published George Mills. Signs of that fame are manifold. The prominent full-page reviews his novels get in the New York Times Book Review and Time, including photographs. The movie based on his novella, The Bail Bondsman, the calls from Hollywood to do scripts or additional dialogue, the invitations to international conferences of writers at Nice and Graz, the guest appearance on The Dick Cavett Show, the recent installation in that peer-selected company of 250 novelists, poets, painters, composers, and critics that comprise the American Academy and the Institute of Arts and Letters. The riches I had in mind for Stanley Elkin were to be got by his being on a bestseller list for months and months, like Irving's The World According to Garp or Updike's Rabbit is Rich. Books not written to be bestsellers, but like Elkin's work speaking to our deepest concerns about death, hypocrisy, injustice, and about human triumph, too, the desire to do more than endure. As of now, I'm only a 50% prophet. The Living End and George Mills are not on the list, but they were honored by the New York Times Book Review by being cited in its editor's choice. Those books that the readers of Henry James, the really knowledgeable, admire. In my desire to be a 100% prophet, I have even begun to suspect that his novels are sold better than I know. Once in a while, he has in conversation flicked a price tag about paperback rights and royalty advances that causes me to wonder. But I must admit, there's an ambivalence here. Though I would like more people to have the pleasure of knowing his work, I would not want him to become too popular. In spite of such relevant examples as Huck Finn and Great Expectations, I have a latent suspicion of best-selling books. If millions like it, there must be something wrong with it. We Jamesians are willing to settle, as of now, for Stanley Elkin as the editor's choice.
I apologize for not being rich. I'm going to read tonight from George Mills, and George appears in this section, but he's not a very important character here. He's talking to a man named Cornell Messenger. Messenger never goes anywhere, never goes out of the house unless he's high. And he's high here. And in this section, Cornell is telling George very sad stories, one after the other. You're only going to hear one of them. Messenger and Hans were sitting in Mills' living room weeping when George came in. "Hey," George Mills said. "Hey now. Hey, don't." Cornell looked up, surprised. He wiped his eyes with his fingers, licked them. "You know that's delicious," he said. "I know," Mills said. "You lick your tears, George?" "I chew my nails. I nibble the hair on my arms." "Really?" Mills have always had pica. Because he was interested now. Because Messenger had him. As he'd had Louise the first time he'd opened his mouth. And whatever might become of his own battered case, he was interested in theirs. Enough to talk, to tell him of his. "In me, under control, arrested, marked out, but you know, still there. I still have a piece of this sweet tooth in my mouth." "This sweet tooth, George?" "A loose appetite, sort of." "Clay? You eat clay, you eat chalk?" "The flavor's okay, I don't care for the texture." "You're a connoisseur. Certain flowers, the stems on fruit, newsprint, erasers." "I chewed erasers," Cornell said. "No, no. From the blackboards. I'd lick dust from their fur." "Better than a connoisseur. You're a gourmet." "I sucked on stones. When I could get it, I put sand in my mouth." "When you could get it? You know, still wet. After the tide had gone out. A sand bouillabaisse. When I was a kid. Most all of this when I was a kid. Not now, not so much. You don't do this stuff now. I watch what I eat. Sometimes I binge, you know, fall off the wagon. You're not kidding me now." "No, I'm not kidding." "Well, what do you eat?" "I eat cigarette ash. I like to get the juice out of cotton." "Are you kidding me, George?" "No," he said, "I already said, not now, not so much." "A meat and potatoes man," Messenger said. "Only the gristle, only the peels." Messenger watched him through his still red, still puffy eyes. "Rust," George said wistfully. "I used to like the taste of rust and rotten discolored wood from trees fallen in forests." "That's good?" "Brown water in puddles, autumn leaves like a breakfast cereal, sweat like a summer drink. Insects, dead birds?" George Mills made a face. "No, of course not," he said. "Things only decline from the ordinary sweets and seasonings, things gone off, the collapsed cheeses, sour as laundry." "You're pulling my leg," Messenger said. "This is how I used to be. It's mostly all changed. I like stale bread. I don't really mind it when the milk turns, the butter. A hint of the rancid, like a touch of hors d'oeuvre. And then, already missing his own old straight man's circumstances, you were crying. Me? Messenger said, his nose and eyes still a little swollen. Hell no. You were crying. I was making lunch. Is it Harv? George Mills asked. Were you crying about Harv? Harv's my kid, Messenger said. I don't talk about my kid. All right, George Mills said. 14 is last birthday, Messenger said. Guess, George Mills said, and sat back. He doesn't get the point of knock-knock jokes. No, George Mills said, and felt stirrings of appetite, his pica curiosity making soft growls in his head. I'm no woodsman, Cornell said. I can't tie a fly, I don't know my bait. No, George Mills said. I can't build a fire or assemble a toy, I haven't much, you know, lore. I was never much good at the father-son sports, we don't go out camping. I don't take him to circuses or watch the parades, we don't tan shirtless in bleachers or root for the teams. He doesn't sip from my beer. I can't name the stars. I don't show him the sky. We didn't play catch. I never taught him to ride. We didn't do float trips or go to the zoo. I like to wrestle, show him the Dutch rub, Indian burns, but the kid thinks I'm angry. His eyes fill with tears. I don't set an example. I don't teach him, well, morals. Whatever it is, they say, has to start in the home. Respect, I don't know, good manners. How you have to learn to appreciate the value of a dollar, that sort of thing. Whatever it was, it never started in ours. 14 years old. And he doesn't get the point of damned knock-knock jokes. I thought we'd go on a trip. This was a couple of years ago. I thought I'd take him on a trip, just the two of us. We just load up the old bus. I mean the car. We drive in the car. We'd stay in motels. We'd order from room service. I had to promise we'd stay in a place with a holodome. Mills looked at him. You know, one of those places, they're enclosed, like a penny arcade. It has a swimming pool, it has a whirlpool and sauna, it has indoor-outdoor carpeting, it has swings and seesaws, computer games. Mills nodded. I had to promise. Otherwise, he wouldn't come. I had to promise to give him money for the machines. I had to promise he could choose what we'd watch on TV. We wouldn't wait for a weekend. We'd make it special, go during school. I woke him at 6. He'll catch breakfast on the highway, I told him. He was very cranky. He went to sleep in the back. Harv, I said. Harv, we're crossing the river. You're missing the sunrise. Wake up, sleepyhead. Why'd you wake me? I'm nauseous. I may have to throw up. Anything you want, Scout, I told him in the restaurant when the waitress came over. What do you want? He was angry as hell. He can't read a menu. His mother says, you want a hamburger, Harv? You want French fries and Coke, son? Me, I don't do that. I wanted to sound it out. He gets so impatient. What'll it be, the waitress said, and I gave her my order. What'll it be? She said to the boy. Can you come back? I'm not ready. Harv glared at me. Anything you want, Harv. What do you want? When she brought me my breakfast, she turned to the kid. Have you made your mind yet? Have you made up your mind yet? And stood poised with her pad. Yeah. I'm not hungry. I can't eat a thing. When I paid at the counter, he pointed to candy. He pointed to gum. Why don't you come up in front, Harv? Why don't you put that airplane down and sit here with Dad? God damn it, Harv, I'm not your chauffeur. But we drove on in silence, the both of us sore. We'd gone 100 miles, maybe, Harv back there sulking, me sulking in front. He'd make sound effect noises with his planes, with his cars. A mimic of engines, impressions of speed. He'd imitate crashes, do disasters, explosions, ships lost at sea. Knock, knock, I said, when we'd driven another hour. Knock, knock, Harv, and stopped for lunch. Harv not glaring at me over his menu this time. Harv, equable, placid, almost benign. Don't I know that kid? Because I'd figured it out in the car, knew what he'd do, knew he'd figured it out too. Don't I know him, don't I? Knew it wasn't even me he was mad at anymore. No, angry at himself for not thinking of it at breakfast. So I knew what he'd do. When the waitress came over, I was ready for him. Have you decided? Well, no, I said. Actually, I haven't. Why don't you ask the boy? And triumphant looked at him, saw the smile leave his face. No, not leave it, but hanging there crooked, like makeup mismanaged, like cosmetics deranged. But I had to hand it to him. I did. I had to take off my hat. I could have kissed him. 2 eggs, he said slowly, remembering, getting it perfect. Scrambled, orange juice, toast. Coffee, he said. Wouldn't you rather have milk, Harv? Sure, he grinned. Milk. Sounds good, I told her. Bring me the same. We stopped off for ice cream, stopped off for Coke. When we filled up in Kentucky, I gave Harv $3. He offered me candy when he came out with a bag. I told him, no thanks, Harv. You know what kids eat. Crap from the space age, sugar fuels, fizz. Candy with noises, a licorice that whistles, a licorice that whips. Panes of sugar so brittle like cracked glass in your mouth, pop drops and doodads, candy like toys. Your mother would kill me if she saw what you got. I made him promise to save some, not to fill himself up. He was sitting up front now, more like it, you know. We got into Nashville just after 5. This is Nashville, I told him, where they make all the country and western records. Nashville is famous. Sure, Harv said. Motown. No, Motown's in Michigan. Motown's Detroit, where they got all the niggers, Harv said. Christ, where do you get that stuff? Your mother doesn't talk like that. I certainly don't. Black people are just like everybody else. They're poor, Harv said. Yes, I said, many of them. Many of them are. Chicken George, Quinta Quinte, slavery's bad. That's right, Harv. That's why they kill us. That's why they steal. That's why they set fires and rape old white ladies and take our bicycles. That's why they're lazy and cheat on welfare. Harv, that's bullshit. You're a bigot, you know that? We were downtown now, stopped at a light. Some people were waiting online for a bus. Your mama, Harv called from the car. Roll up that window. God damn it, Harv. George Mills was giggling. We could have been killed, Messenger said. We could have been jabbed in the eyes with their hat pins. We could have been slashed in the guts with their shivs. Enhanced, he began to laugh. They could have pulled us out of the car and OD'd our asses with bad skag. They could have done us an injury with their Saturday night specials. Oh, Jesus, he wiped his eyes, licked his fingers. Delicious, he said. Weeping delicious and laughter delicious, too. All of it delicious. Did you find the place? Mills asked. What, the Holodome? George nodded.